If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In Motherly's most recent State of Motherhood survey, our research showed that 92% of mothers say society doesn't do a good job of understanding us or even supporting motherhood at all. 92%. And that number has increased every year we've conducted this study. That lack of support starts really the minute that you give birth. And suddenly you're thrust into this incredibly new and challenging situation, frequently without a village to help and support you, and certainly without paid maternity leave. Our culture asks that you step right back into that same busy and productive lifestyle, not acknowledging the new baby, not supporting the new mother. But here's what we all need to remember. This lack of support, this lack of understanding, this wasn't always the case, and it isn't always the case. All around the world, in China, the tradition of postpartum care in the first 40 days is known as sitting the month. In Latin America, it goes by another name that refers to the quarantine of this time. And in India, a new mother returns to her parents' home with her newborn for up to 3 months of focused care. In Chinese culture, it's even believed that this rest and recovery period can help keep a mother's future illnesses and depression at bay. And in fact, there's research to support this concept that postpartum moms, when they have a village of support around them, nourishing them, nourishing their baby, it really does reduce rates of postpartum depression and anxiety. And since in many places in America that is not the norm, in some ways it's no wonder that we have an epidemic of mental health problems when women are postpartum. I learned all of this and more from Han Oh's beautiful and empowering book, The First 40 Days, The Essential Art of Nourishing the New Mother. I think every new mother deserves a copy of this book. I hope you find a way to get your hands on it. Hey, Mama, welcome to the Motherly Podcast. I am Liz Tennedy, the co-founder of Motherly, and I'm a mother of four myself. All month, we're focusing this podcast on the theme of nourishment, the nourishment of our bodies, our souls, and our children. And today, I'm speaking to Han Oh, the author of that beautiful book, The First 40 Days, and the founder of Mother Bees, which is a food and lifestyle company supporting women through every stage of motherhood. I talked to Han about the important healing period known as those 40 days after a mother gives birth. A practice of honoring that period has been cultivated around the world and throughout time and culture, but really has been lost in our modern Western society. We also talked about the importance of support systems around new mothers and babies, and why some of the changes and momentum we've seen in the last few years around investing in postpartum care have been really positive ones and give us hope for the future. Han Oh, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Liz.
This season, we're really focusing on what it takes to really nourish mothers, especially new moms. And you've really built a whole career around that. So we're so excited to have you. But I'm curious to start for you personally, who or what nourished you when you first became a mother?
And I think specifically that first time, that becoming a mother, and how was that experience perhaps different or the same from your subsequent births and postpartum periods?
It's definitely been many decades of learning and picking up the different stories from my lineage of being Chinese and growing up with grandparents, grandmothers, aunts, uncles, who are very much interested in the herbal acupuncture lifestyle. So it's always been ingrained in my mind and my life about living your day with functional food. I must say, after having my first baby, you know, my husband at the time, we were very, very lost. Like, we were as surprised as many new mothers and new fathers are when they come back from the hospital. It is that moment of like, oh my God, like, what just happened? So I think that's fairly normal and healthy in a way, right? Yeah, I'm sure. It's real. So we did have that. But luckily, my aunt, she just said, you know what, we're coming down. We're coming down from Oakland, and I'm going to bring your cousin, and we're going to bring tons of food over, and we're going to just cook for you. She just said, you know, we're going to do this. And, you know, we were alone. So I definitely didn't say no to that. And I definitely welcomed it because, one, I loved her food. And two, you know, she's an acupuncturist, and she's always taught me about the needs of what this particular practice is and how important it is.
Tell us more about some of the specifics. And I know you, of course, have written this book, which has a massive cult following, The First 40 Days, The Essential Art of Nourishing the New Mother. It's also incredibly beautiful to look at and kind of gives you a sense of hope that we don't have to do this alone and that traditions of women throughout time, all around the world, certainly in your own particular tradition as a Chinese American, people have taken care of new mothers in a way that is unfamiliar to many of us in modern America. So what are some of the specific things that were done for you, but that also connect to this Chinese tradition of sitting the month?
So the importance of where it came from was that culturally, it's really about binding the woman's body to a place of, they call it confinement. And as Americans, when we hear the word confinement, we want to sort of like break out of that and scream and say, I'm not going to be confined. Like, no one's going to confine me. You know, I'm going to do what I want to do. But their mentality is that it's really about reserving, preserving, all that is opened. The womb is open, the cells, the hair, you know, like all the pores are opened, especially, you know, after such a sort of like a traumatic experience, no matter how the baby came out. So it's perceived as a very, very like pivotal time of a woman's life. They say like, if it's not sort of like contained at that time, it could, you know, be the catalyst for many other health issues down the line. And that could mean lower back pain, you know, achy joints, arthritis, headaches. It could go down to like autoimmune, like all the issues that then we now then see in perimenopause and menopause. So when they say, oh my God, I got the hot flashes or this and that, then most traditional acupuncturists would ask, well, how was your postpartum? How did you take care of yourself? And then you're like, well, you know, I kind of just went out and went shopping all of a sudden and went walking the week right after birth. They're always like, you know, nodding their head. They're like, well, that was the moment of, you know, really containing and preserving. It's really fascinating when you start learning about the essence and the importance of traditional Chinese medicine, really. And also not just Chinese medicine. It's everywhere. It's in India, Africa, and South America, and most countries. And something about America, we're just lagging very much behind.
Well, you point out in your book that we are a culture that so values productivity that the idea of deliberately resting, right, which is what this practice encourages mothers to do, to deliberately rest, and then to have a village of people to care for her, how at odds that is with modern productivity culture. And I think we just need to kind of call that out, because if it's feeling incongruent for our listeners who want to recover postpartum, but they're living in a culture where they don't have access to paid maternity leave and we live in a culture obsessed with productivity. Like, we have to all start to be aware of the forces that are kind of conspiring against us. But you kind of bring it back to how central it is during this critical time, these first 40 days, because not only is a new baby being born and brought into the world, but really, what will it actually take to nourish that mother? There's a new being, there is a new mother as well.
Absolutely. I agree with everything you just said. It's so true. You know, it's a dilemma. And it's true. Like, we do have to call it for what it is, because we have to take responsibility. We are all part of the society. With the research that I was doing with the book, I was visiting and traveling to Shanghai and India. And I would, like, find any grandmother or auntie and ask them questions, or try to visit, like, confinement hotels in Shanghai. Then I later find out that in China, you know, it's $100 billion industry for home care. Mm-hmm. And 30% of that is for in-home for moms and babies. And with that rate, and also with the confinement hotels, it's just incredible how much the government is investing into new moms, because they want mm-hmm. healthy citizens. They want healthy society. They want a healthy workforce. So they know the essence of what it is and how important it is to start from the mother herself, who is bearing the child. And I don't know why the concept of that is disconnected here.
Are there some common themes that you saw as you studied these traditions around the world in terms of what does it actually take to nourish the mother? Because what I saw were things like the role of a grandmother, maternal presence, right, in the home, the role of food, the role of rest. Are there some common themes that you saw when you studied across these cultures?
Absolutely. I think more so, it's really about the mother who just says a yes and not surrendering to be in a place of complacency or just, like, you know, surrendering, but she just says yes to what that care may look like. So let's say in India, in the smaller towns, they just move around as a whole family, right? Of a whole village. Mm. So that's how they take care of each other. And to be a new mom, it's just a way of life for them. They don't separate them. They don't just shun them. They all know that they all have to start caring for her extra more sensitively because she just gave birth, or she's about to give birth. Mm-hmm. So the extra foods, the special foods, just the more quiet space that they would sort of, like, create for her is sort of, like, just thoughtfully created for her. So the new mom, she just knows that without spending tons of money or needing to buy extravagant anything, she's just going to move into the space of, okay, I'm just giving birth and I'm going to just have this time to fully rest, and meals will be cooked for me and my space will be cleaned for me. And, you know, I'm going to have aunties and, you know, and grandmothers who are going to come and hold my baby and help me throughout the next few weeks, which is so simple, right? And also they're going to mm-hmm. massage me, because massaging is part of their culture. We're not, like, booking appointments, or we're not, you know, they're just like, right. It's just like touch to them is so normal.
Yeah. And I feel like this kind of gets at the dilemma of modern American motherhood, because you are talking about sort of active, but also ancient traditions still being lived out today, where mothers know what to expect. The aunties and their distant relatives or people in their neighborhood are going to show up for them. And here in America, so many mothers know that nobody's showing up for them, right? First of all, there's no tradition of people helping a new mother. There's no policies to protect her. And if she does have help, in many cases, it's because she's directly asking for help. You sort of work and serve all kinds of new moms through your business that you've built up. What advice do you have for a mother today in the U.S. who just doesn't have access to a tradition like that, but knows that that's what it takes? Where does she start?
When I sort of, like, share the stories of the smaller villages and the more inclusive family environments, there's also the extremity of, you know, let's say these Asian confinement hotels. These couples would pay quite a bit of money to stay at these hotels, knowing that the extra care and everything is there. And they also invest that money. It could be a lot, you know, and mm-hmm. it's as important as maybe, like, putting money towards a wedding. They also know, of course, obviously, it's the health of the mom. So, you know, we go back to the modern American woman that does not have her family nearby, or even if she does, they don't know how to take care of her, or maybe she doesn't want them there at that time because boundaries and just there's so many different things when you start to kind of like, you know, I think this is like so many women's issue when they think about postpartum is they think about the in-laws, they think about the moms, and they start like to quiver inside. They start to be like, oh my God, I don't want her to be in my space for this long. So I'd rather just do this by myself. So that's a part that I think that a lot of new mothers around the world, they might like have a different struggle, but I think this kind of struggle, they sort of, I don't know, it feels like they kind of like put this one aside.
We value our individualism and our autonomy so highly here. And so we all choose our own paths. But because of it, the flip side is there's not an expected path of postpartum care and support that they're expected to give it to us. And we're kind of expected to accept it either. That doesn't exist.
Absolutely. So my suggestion is that as long as she has like one support person that she could go to or a call or a text, or if it's her, you know, partner, or, you know, if she doesn't have a partner, then as long as she has like at least one person that she knows that is sort of like her lifeline. She doesn't have to pay for this person. It could be like just a friend who, you know, could just like make a little bit of food and drop it off. And I think really at the end of the day, it's not really about the food itself. It's really about knowing that she is being thought of and seen and cared for, even if it's not in her space. That's one level. Another level, of course, is to actually get the physical help, which if we could all do and ask for, I know that we would want all of it, all the above, of just having someone
Absolutely.
To help us organize and clean and just do everything and have the checkups, you know, right in our home and make us food all day long. So it sounds really appealing. But if you, again, like if you don't have that kind of access to that kind of care, then, you know, I think it's not really about making yourself feel bad or feeling guilty about not having that sort of resource. But there are definitely ways of orchestrating that yourself. And it's really about you not being the victim and saying, hey, you know what? This is what I deserve. This is what I want to feel. I don't know what it's going to be like, but whatever it's going to be, I want to feel supported in a sort of container.
Absolutely. I was reading other research this week about how just the presence of that village for mothers leads to reduced rates of postpartum depression, and that in some ways the epidemic of postpartum anxiety and depression, one of the things that accounts for how much of a crisis we have in the United States is just the lack of social connections, because these traditions in many places in America, they just don't exist. And I found it so helpful reading your book, one, to know these are how traditions have nourished mothers. So if maybe you're from a place where you're not getting that kind of nourishment, just feeling seen in that, right? Like there's not something wrong with you. It's that you're not being cared for the way we evolved to thrive. That was helpful. But then also I appreciate the encouragement of, are there people in your life who you could get a little uncomfortable within yourself, but actively ask for help? You know, we want to be able to say we can do it all. And it's helpful to hear that part of what we also need to do is just to say, this is what I need, to whoever it is around you who is in a position to help.
Absolutely. And I think that the term multitasking, you know, as an independent person back in the days, like I thought being multitasker was so cool. I think I definitely struggle with that now, you know, with having three kids and having, you know, just everything that I need to handle. I don't want to multitask really anything ever again. Like, I don't like the idea at all. I feel like it drives me crazy, gives me anxiety. Like, I don't like it.
That was like a light bulb moment, literally for me in the last week. I thought that tension that I feel as a busy mom, I need to stop being in two places at once. I need to stop being with my kids and on my phone, or on my phone at a soccer game. Like, the gift that I can give, I think, is full presence in whatever activity I happen to be doing.
Yeah, I think that's the gift of having kids. They really knock on your door constantly and say, hey, you know what? Are you waking up to this? Are you waking up to this? Have you woken up? Do I have to show you more? Do I have to do this more? Do I have to do more tantrums do I have to, like, really, what do I have to do to tell you that I am here and I deserve your presence? 100%.
So I want to talk a little bit about the business that you started that grew out of the experience you had postpartum. You come from a family of healers who are different kinds of practitioners within Chinese medicine. So tell us about what it was that kind of convinced you that there was just this urgent need to support moms, to nourish mothers, and how did that business grow out of that insight that you had?
After having my third baby, I then experienced a lot of marital issues. We pretty much broke up that year that I gave birth to my son. And after 5 years of being pregnant and giving birth and thinking that this was going to be the life that we were all establishing together, it all fell apart. As we know, when that happens, you sort of have to look in and dig in deep inside yourself. And for myself, I really felt like, well, what was really important to me? And at that time was really about, well, motherhood is now really important to me. And I didn't know motherhood was going to be important to me because I sort of like was not acknowledging the fact of like, wow, I'm actually a mother to three human beings and they really need me. My husband, at the time, we were starting our own business as well. So I think just having my first postpartum experience, having sort of like the well-fed from my auntie to my second birth, I pretty much went straight into the office the next day. Felt like I gave birth to her in the living room. And it seemed like the next day I was like, I strapped her on. I said, oh, I'll just feed her in the office. So I kind of like stormed right in. And then the third birth, right before I was about to give birth, I fell ill for about a month. So I was in bed for about a month before I gave birth to him. So after I gave birth, I was just sort of like, you know what, this kind of sucks. I was just newly a mom again after three little babies. So I just thought, you know what, I got to be in action, you know, because like when you're in a survival mode, you sort of like have to take action. So I just started making food. And being a chef or a cook isn't in my background, you know, it's definitely in my auntie's background, but it wasn't really my sort of like desire to just be in the kitchen and cook. But I just knew that I had to sort of do this kind of like service for myself and for others. So I just start making food to anyone that was pregnant around me. And I would just say, hey, you know what, would you just take a couple of these jars? And they would always say, yeah, you know, I'm about to give birth. Absolutely, I'll just take them. So I just started doing that. And back then we didn't have this kind of service. There are some Chinese services that are sort of like just for the Chinese community. And it's pretty much all Chinese food. They do still exist. There's definitely a part of me that loves service and caring for others, especially caring for others in need. And I looked around at that time, 13 years ago, and I just said, there's nothing around me. I didn't even know lactation specialists were around. I had issues that I just thought I had to sort of suffer on my own. So we moved a long way 13 years later as a society, which I'm so proud of. But back then, it was a hit and miss about how to survive.
And so that business became this food delivery service of sorts for new mothers. Can you talk a bit about how it has grown over the last decade?
For several years, I was just delivering the food and also trying to raise my three little ones. So it was a lot of juggling. So again, like I just did it and started off to be that. And it's still evolving as any, you know, startups are. And I start to sort of like understand that beyond the new mother, we have tons of aches and pains beyond just like that postpartum period. And for me, health and wellness and nourishing that period of a person's life is really important to me. And also the functional part of food and how that plays in the correlation between like the mind, the choice, the mental power to how one chooses food. So right now it's evolving, it's expanding outside of just postpartum care, because I feel like the trend had started and it's definitely rolling and it's just like, it's moving. So I'm very happy to see that. But I feel like there's a whole different genre of ailments or issues or challenges to solve and to help fix.
Postpartum is just, it is an acute moment and it's almost like an opportunity to rethink how we nourish ourselves for the long haul of our lives. But it is such a critical period. What are some soul nourishing rituals that you recommend for new mothers?
Now that I'm 18 years in being a mom, and also I'm a single mom half the time. So I get to experience what it's like to be independently on my own without my kids. And then they come back home and the whole house is just like, it's them. It's like an amusement park. And then they leave. And then like, I'm like, okay, it's got to go back to that simplicity again. So I get to kind of yo-yo back, right? Back and forth. So, you know, I feel like transitions are humongous for me. Knowing that I'm going to move into the place of, let's say, receiving my kids back, or we're going to move into a place of having other friends over, or something that's going to be sort of like disruptive in my flow of living. I need a transition that I create for myself, meaning that I might go take a walk outside, go sit in my room in a corner and sort of close my eyes for 2 minutes, go take a shower, or I might sit in the car for an extra, you know, 3 minutes. So just like creating these breaks, and it could be many, many breaks throughout the day, it doesn't really matter. But I think if you sort of like consciously know that you're going to take these like few seconds or a few minutes before you move in, and it could just, again, be about closing your eyes or grounding your feet or just breathing a few breaths, that's free. You don't need any app. That's in your own consciousness to stop yourself and not go into the snowball effect of, oh my God, I just gotta go, go, go. At the end of the day, I'm like, I don't even know myself anymore. I'm completely stripped down. And I think this is why midlife issues happen. You know, at the end of the 18 years of being a mother or a parent, you're just like, I don't know who I am anymore. I don't know my passions. I don't know my drive. I don't know my purpose. And I think that's a problem, again, like of our society of like, why are we going so fast? Are our kids asking us? Are they requiring us to, like, yeah, they can be a little demanding. And then, you know, they do have their ask, but kind of like, why? Why so speedy? And we talk about this a lot about just slowing down and slowing everything down and paying more attention.
We talked about how new mothers become new mothers in American culture in a place that values productivity and busyness, but especially productivity over everything. And I think there's an evolution that happens within us, right? First, a recognition that I have to slow down, even though I live in this culture that tells me that what I'm doing maybe isn't important or it's not productive, which of course we don't believe, but that's what maybe the culture says to us. But then I think I want to go further and echo what you said. Why are we going so fast? What are we racing for? Isn't this just as important as whatever productivity we think is out there? And why can't we center this experience, which is at the core of being human, is bringing a new generation of humans into the world? Why is that less central, you know, and kind of actively saying this is just as important. Maybe it's more important than productivity.
It's true, because in a moment of pause, it causes uncomfortableness. And if we're not getting that instant reward or instant praise or instant like, oh my God, you're doing such a great job, mom, like keep on going. If we're not getting that, it's not going to be comfortable for us. So why sit in pause or quietness or stillness when you're not getting the instant gratification that we know that we can get from our phones? Again, you know, it's something that we need to sort of, which we are, I feel like we are, we're having this conversation about it. And I think we're on the cusp of changing all the above that we just talked about and where we came from. And it's really becoming a really great movement that we're seeing. And I'm really hopeful of where we're going to be moving into in the postpartum care world. And, you know, I do hope that we do get a lot more support as a society with our government and with our workforce, and not feeling like we're strapped to going back to work after 2 weeks or 10 days or something ridiculous like that. I want us to feel like more valued for what we just went through.
I couldn't agree more. I feel hopeful. I feel like we are finally culturally at a tipping point when it comes to things ranging from entrepreneurship in this space, a mother-centered approach to pregnancy and postpartum versus just a baby-centered one, government policies, flexible work policies. I think we are living through an era of change, which is why having people who have kind of been leading the charge like you on podcasts like this, I think is really important for people to get that inspiration and know that change is possible and change is happening. Well, Han, thank you so much for joining us on the Motherly Podcast and sharing all of your wisdom with our listeners today.
Thank you, Liz, and creating such an amazing platform for all.
Thank you. Do you remember when James came home from the hospital?
Kind of. I'm sleeping in bed with Tia, and I remember when I wake up.
Yeah, who was there when you woke up that morning?
A little Wamsie!
Little Wamsie?
Mommy, go.
It was you, James?
Yeah.
It was you. You were born.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. And go, Mommy, go.
And do you remember who was there to take care of Mommy?
Yeah.
Doctor.
Yeah, the midwife. She came back to the house to take care of me after you were born?
Yeah.
So after the baby is born, Mom and Dad came home from the birth center, but then the midwife came over the next morning to check on me.
So you needed to sleep before.
I needed to sleep, I needed to rest, and then she came over and checked on me and James.
Yeah. And checked on this little boy.
And this little mama. That's it for our show this week. Thank you so much, Han, and thank you for listening to our podcast this season. We have an incredible guest lineup coming up. I cannot wait for you to listen. So if you're hearing me now, please take 10 seconds to help forward this podcast on to another mom friend. Share us anywhere that you have a platform to tell where you're getting your inspiration around motherhood. But probably the biggest thing you could do is to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It takes about 30 seconds, but that little act really helps other mothers discover our show. The Motherly Podcast is produced by Jennifer Bassett with editing from Seaplane Armada. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions, and I am your host, Liz Tennedy. Thank you so much for listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.